The outgoing University of Wisconsin Chancellor John Wiley will be our guest after the news to talk with you about his article in the latest issue of Madison Magazine, where he wrote, "Wisconsin has lost its way. We've lost touch with our tradition and values. Our politics has become a poisonous swill, and the most influential voice for the business community has been taken hostage by partisan ideologues." Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio at 7 o'clock on this Monday, August the 25th. And coming up in our state capitol report this hour, we'll find out why Chancellor Wiley says the business community and the university are stuck in a swamp and what he thinks is needed to crawl out of it. Join us for the state capitol report after this check of the latest news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. The Democrats opened their convention in Denver today to nominate Barack Obama for president. His wife Michelle will speak tonight, while the candidate will accept the nomination Thursday night from the 50-yard line at Invesco Field at Mile High Stadium. The convention is being held at Denver's Pepsi Center. Yesterday, demonstrators marched on the site to protest the war in Iraq. Kirk Sigler of member station KUNC reports.
Our streets! Our streets! Mostly peaceful protest was led by an anti-war group known as Recreate 68, which has several protests and marches planned throughout the convention week. 26-year-old Noah Holtman drove through the night to get here from Kansas City. Holtman is frustrated with the two-party system that he says doesn't listen to the people.
You know, it's kind of relevant right now. What they're telling us is, of course, change is big. You know, that gets people elected. We'll see. I haven't seen much change. It's still, again, the same two options.
Police made no arrests. Nearby, though, three anti-abortion protesters were thrown out of a religious gathering sponsored by the DNC after shouting that presumptive nominee Barack Obama was a baby killer. For NPR News, I'm Kirk Sigler in Denver.
Israel today released almost 200 Palestinian prisoners as a goodwill gesture to Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. Later today, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice will arrive in Israel for negotiations on an Israeli-Palestinian peace deal. Linda Gradstein reports.
The prisoners received a hero's welcome in the West Bank town of Ramallah, where thousands of people waved Palestinian flags and danced in the streets. Among those freed today was the longest-serving Palestinian prisoner in an Israeli jail, 57-year-old Said al-Ataba. He was arrested in 1977 and convicted of involvement in attacks that killed an Israeli woman and wounded dozens. At a ceremony welcoming the detainees, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas called on Israel to free more prisoners. The human rights group B'Tselem says there are about 8,500 Palestinian detainees in Israeli jails. Israeli government spokesman Mark Regev said it's not easy for Israel to free prisoners who were convicted of attacks on Israelis, but Israel wants to strengthen Abbas. Secretary Rice will meet Abbas and Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert during her 24-hour visit. For NPR News, I'm Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem.
Gasoline prices have dropped 15 cents a gallon over the past 2 weeks. The average price nationally for self-service regular is $3.70 a gallon. Industry analyst Trilby Lundberg cites two reasons for the change.
The drop comes from lower gasoline demand because of high price, and from lower profit margins for both refiners and gasoline retailers.
Lundberg says that gas prices typically decline at this time of year as the summer driving season ends. This is NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Chevy. Eight models with 30 mpg on the highway, including Cobalt XFE Coupe with 36, based on EPA estimates. Chevy.com.
The outgoing chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, John Wiley, is leaving his post with a bang. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, August the 25th. And you're tuned to our weekly State Capitol Report. In his final week on the job before he leaves to become the interim director of the Wisconsin Institutes for Discovery, Chancellor Wiley is with us to discuss an essay he wrote for Madison Magazine, in which he says, "Wisconsin politics has become a poisonous swill, and that the hyperpartisan political environment at the state capitol is toxic, and that the state's largest lobbying group for businesses, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, has been taken hostage by partisan ideologues, and it's hurting the state's future." We suspect that you might have some questions and thoughts for Chancellor Wiley, and we welcome them at 1-800-642-1234. If you're in Madison, please call 263-1890 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. But get your comments for Chancellor Wiley in soon, because at 7:30 or after 7:30, we will get a response from a guest from Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. John Wiley is the Chancellor of UW-Madison. He steps down on September the 1st. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for coming in. This Madison Magazine article is a follow-up to one that you wrote 5 years ago that was entitled Higher Education at the Crossroads. The title of this latest piece is From Crossroads to Crisis. We're at a crisis now, you think?
Well, I think we are.
Why?
I tried to set out the case in the first article for the importance of post-secondary education in a knowledge economy. It's pretty obvious to most people. It almost sounds cliche, but the direction the state of Wisconsin is going is not going to get us where we need to be. And I analyzed how much we spend on K-12 education, the unlikelihood of people who enter the job force with just a high school diploma will ever pay back to the taxpayers the cost of their high school diploma, and the importance of supporting the university system, the WTCS system, high-skilled job training in the skilled trades, and so on. And we're falling behind other states, most especially. I've put the emphasis in both articles on a point-by-point comparison between Wisconsin and Minnesota. They've pulled way ahead of us, and we need to take a look at what they've done and learn from that.
Yeah. Do you, you place much of the blame or some of the blame at the doorstep of WMC, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce?
Well, I place much of the blame at the extent to which Wisconsin politics has become just completely polarized. It's so hyper-partisan that the two sides really can't get, and don't want to, apparently, get together and solve problems. And then you ask, so why has it become so polarized? And it's because the supporters of candidates for office push in extreme directions. The biggest and most effective of those has been WMC. So I put the emphasis there.
Yeah. So what specifically has WMC done that has contributed to the poisonous swill?
Well, if you read their mission statement, the fact that they claim to be focused on making Wisconsin the most competitive state in the country, and they have very nice-sounding language in on their website and elsewhere about their support for education and so on. But if you compare what they say with what they do, there's a big difference. What they do, as far as I can see, and maybe your next guest will be able to enlighten me on this, what they do is support extremely conservative Republican candidates for every office and support only reducing any and all taxes at every opportunity.
Yeah.
That basically is a path to starving the public sector out of existence, which is what we're on a path to doing. And it's hurt the university most specifically because among the discretionary parts of the state budget, the university is the only one, the only state agency, that has an immediately obvious alternative revenue source, and that's tuition. So what you've seen as a consequence is tuition going up dramatically in every biennium, faster than inflation. And it's not that our costs are going up that fast. It's that we're shifting the burden of paying for college off of the state taxpayers and onto the students and their families. And I'll acknowledge that's a fair public policy debate. We should be talking about that. Where is the right dividing line? Historically, in Wisconsin, we've operated on the assumption that the state would pay about 2/3 the cost of education and the students and their families about 1/3. I don't know where that number came from. I don't know if that's the right number. Today, it's about 50-50. I don't know if that's the right number. Maybe it should be 1/3, 2/3 instead of 2/3, 1/3. But we haven't discussed that. We've simply, in one biennium after another, in fact, in six out of the last seven biennia, cut back state taxpayer support for the university system and offset it with increasing tuition without deciding whether that was the right thing to do.
Yeah. How is this harming the university?
Well, it's harmed us most in the areas that don't have any good alternative revenue sources. That's in the general infrastructure support of the university. Almost every budget cut has been accompanied by targeted language from the governors or the legislature to take as much as possible of that cut out of administration. And we've done that. But there are some kinds of things that are that you wouldn't think of that are labeled as administrative costs, like a police department, for example. I haven't felt that I could really cut the police department. Post 9/11, we need more security, not less. The library system, I haven't been able to cut that as much as maybe some people think I should, for a whole variety of reasons. And then there are other types of administrative jobs, like admissions and the registrar and counseling. We need, look at all of the catastrophes that have happened at campuses around the country, from deranged students with guns. We need more mental health counseling. All of these things end up getting counted as administrative burden. So we've cut administration about as much as we can, maybe in some areas more than we should have. Yeah. And that leaves the university really stretched.
Why not leave this issue, this problem, to your successor, Carolyn Biddy Martin, who takes the reins when you retire at the end of the week? Why speak out on this now?
Well, while I was chancellor, I felt that it probably would not be a good idea for me to speak out on this in the way I have. As a matter of fact, when I learned that this article would appear in the September issue, I thought, that's good, I'll be gone by then.
Oops.
I didn't realize, or maybe was naive about early release. It came out in the last week or two of my mm-hmm. time as chancellor, but that's okay. I don't mind. Well, I am leaving the problem for her. She's going to face it too, and so will every chancellor from now on until we get this problem fixed.
A spokesperson for Republican State Representative Stephen Nass, a frequent critic of the UW system, was asked about your remarks by the Wisconsin State Journal last week, and he said, quoting him, you are an arrogant elitist, and that you could end up hurting relations between the university and the legislature with these comments.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you hear any rebuttal in there? I mean, that's just name-calling. I don't see that was a useful contribution to the dialogue.
Yeah. WMC says that you've got it wrong with your criticism of them, too, and they had a long list, which I can't necessarily detail one by one, but what's your reaction to a WMC saying, hey, wait a minute, you've got it wrong?
Well, what else can they say? Of course they're going to defend themselves, and that's fair enough. But most of what they point to in their own defense is words that they've said, not actions they've taken. In the first article that I wrote, I said it would probably be surprising if I didn't have some thoughts or ideas about directions for solutions, but that I would rather not put them out. I'd rather simply throw out the problem for public debate. Well, that debate hasn't occurred, so this time I threw out some of my thoughts and ideas about solutions. First and foremost is tax reform. We need to completely revise the Wisconsin tax system. We way over-rely on personal income tax and property tax, which are the two most unpopular taxes. We all know they're too high. We under-rely on other kinds of taxes, consumption taxes.
A sales tax.
Almost everything is exempt. It's designed for an economy that doesn't exist anymore. Our business taxes are among the lowest in the nation.
We'll talk more about some of your proposed solutions and more about the problem and take calls. We have a number of people who do want to start the debate. Deborah in Hudson joins us first. Hi, Deborah. You're
Hi.
On the air.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
It sounds so depressing, and I just want to know if he can make a list of his ideas on how to reverse what the WMC is doing, because it seems that by their selfish gains, everybody loses.
Yeah,
and that's it.
What can we do about WMC's power, Chancellor Wiley?
Well, not a lot. WMC is an organization that represents supposedly about 4,000 businesses. I'm not aware of any way to get a list of those member companies, but I assume it's an accurate number. Do I believe that the actions that have been taken by the organization, by the board of directors and staff of WMC, accurately represent the wishes of the majority of those companies? No, I really don't, but I can't prove that, and I hope WMC will comment on that.
You do call in your article that businesses that belong to WMC or do business with WMC in some way, contact the leadership there and try to stop, I don't know, make sure that the leadership there knows that the businesses that belong don't like the partisan politics.
That's right. I get around the state a lot. I speak to a lot of business groups, Optimist clubs, Kiwanis clubs. We have a lot of business advisory committees. In fact, the president of WMC, Jim Haney, has served on committees that we've put together, and he's been very helpful in our strategic planning as a university. So I talk to a lot of businessmen, businesswomen, and I hear from them what they think of WMC. This includes companies that have dropped out of WMC in protest and members that have resigned from the board of WMC in protest. They've told me their observations from the inside of the organization. And so that in part informs my own view of what's going on.
We're talking with John Wiley, the outgoing chancellor of UW-Madison, talking about his views on the current state of politics in Wisconsin and how the partisan politics are hurting the prospects for Wisconsin's future. 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number if you have a question or a thought about this, in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's now 18 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, August the 25th. You're listening to the State Capitol Report. We are talking with the outgoing chancellor of UW-Madison, John Wiley, who says unless we want Wisconsin to become a permanent third-world state, we need to stop electing fanatically dedicated partisan ideologues of all stripes and start electing pragmatic problem solvers. Pretty hopeful that's going to happen, Chancellor Wiley?
We can always hope.
Yeah. To the phones we go again. Tim in Whitewater is with us next. Hi, you're on the air.
Morning. First of all, I want to thank the Chancellor for his work there. I'm an alumnus of the university. I've met him. I think he is a forward-thinking man. In fact, I intend to have a little conversation with Mr. Noss about his staffer's inappropriate comments. And I appreciate this article. It does raise some very good points, some of them which are very true. The one thing I would have criticism with is that it also could have been an opportunity for the chancellor to maybe rein in a little bit of the staff of the university, too. I mean, there are part of the reason for some of this divide is just some of the attitudes of some of the staff, which tend to be quite often very anti-business and left-leaning, so I don't think he can take a complete shot at the WMC, though they do certainly have their, deserve some criticism. I think this was also an opportunity for the chancellor to possibly remind the staff there that they don't quite need to be quite so anti-business.
Tim, Tim, without necessarily naming names, what sorts of comments do university staff make that are anti-business? Why do you say university staff are anti-business?
I think sometimes it's just a general attitude. I'm sure if you did, admittedly, if you did a survey of the staff there, they probably fall very heavily towards the Democratic leanings. And you hear that when you're, you definitely get that drift when you're a student on campus there. And it's just, it's not, not across the board, obviously, but, just in general terms, I think that's, a fair assessment. And this was an opportunity, I think, for the chancellor to remind the staff, too, that they need to try to be a little more unbiased, too, in their discussions and their with students, et cetera.
Yeah. How about that observation, Chancellor Wiley?
Well, I hear that a lot, and I have no idea how to figure out what the political center of gravity of the campus is. I can tell you for sure that the college I came from, engineering, is largely conservative, the faculty are. The same is true of the business school. The same is true of the medical school. Most of our professional schools tend to be reasonably conservative, certainly fiscally conservative. And in many cases, most cases, socially conservative. I have no idea how they vote, whether they're Democrat or Republican or independent or whatever, and I have no intention of trying to find out. That's their business. As far as the university as a whole, all of our official communications go through a central communication office, which is very carefully nonpartisan. There is no quote-unquote university position on most issues. In order for us to take a position or for me to speak on behalf of the whole university, I need to have votes in the student government, in the academic staff assembly, in the faculty senate, and from the regents. I mean, we have to have a broad consensus before we take a position on a public issue, a political issue. And that almost never happens. In fact, there's almost never a need to do that.
Let me put some words in Representative Stephen Nass's mouth. We did, by the way, invite him to be a part of this program. He was unavailable. He has said in the past that the university system, not just UW-Madison, but the university system really needs to be more accountable, and that you shouldn't have the right to spend money untethered without any oversight from the legislature. Do you think you should?
No, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. And we're very accountable. I think it's interesting. I know there's a broad view out there in the public that somehow or other, in the good old days, everyone graduated in 4 years and now it takes five or six or seven, and all sorts of other notions of that sort. Let me tell you what the facts are. At UW-Madison, the average time to degree is 4.17 years and dropping every year. The graduation rate back when I was in school was about a third. Today it's 82%. So, and that's the highest in the state, public or private. So I think we're doing quite well. We monitor all the things the public cares about and make sure that we're improving on all those indicators every year. That's solid accountability. Yeah. Now, are there occasionally people who misbehave or do something they shouldn't or misuse money? Of course there are. We have 18,000 employees, and things happen. People have mental health problems sometimes and do things they shouldn't. We've got a system in place to try to discover that and take action, and we do. On the other hand, as soon as I'm suspicious that someone's done something or as soon as it's alleged, I can't just immediately summarily fire them, which is what many legislators ordered me to do when we had an unfortunate month or two with three faculty accused of serious felonies all at the same time. I can't just fire those people without due process and without a fair trial.
Back to the phone. Steve in Madison is with us next. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Thank you, Joy. And thank you for being here, Chancellor Wiley. I hope that this discourse continues that you've begun, and you'll continue shining light on some of the severe problems that WMC and the legislature burden the university with. When we're talking about accountability, I would much rather hear about accountability from the legislature, which has some of the lowest productivity of any institution. And one thing that doesn't get enough public attention is that in the last 10 years, with about a $1.5 billion building program, the university, under the leadership of Chancellor Wiley, raised about $1.2 billion of that with minimal support from the state for one of the most impressive growth periods in the university's history. It's absolutely amazing what's been happening despite the anchor that the legislature attaches to the university. So please continue this dialogue in your retirement, Chancellor Wiley. It's very valuable. I'm encouraged that Tim from Whitewater could call up and at least see that his representative is one of the key problems and has very little to show for his accomplishments other than trying to tarnish the university. But keep up the good work, Chancellor Wiley.
Thank you very much.
You did in your article talk about the state's building program being scandalous. Is that your word?
That was my word.
Why?
Well, for starters, our process involves asking the regents for permission to build a building, and before they'll give permission, they need to know how much it's going to cost, so we have to set a budget. They do that, though, because we have to go to the State Building Commission and get permission, and we have to have a budget, an authorized spending level. And then we go out for sealed bids. Now, once we've publicly announced that we have $50 million to spend on a project, what use is it to go for sealed bids? What do you think they're going to bid? If you wanted to build a fence in your backyard, would you go to a contractor and say, I would like to spend $30,000 on a fence. How much will you charge me to build my fence?
No.
that's just the beginning. It gets worse from there. The administrative process for getting a building done is so complicated and so time-consuming There are lots of contractors who won't even bid on state work. It's just not worth it. It's too much hassle.
Let me share an email from Jane in Appleton. Was curious why it was the chancellor, why the chancellor only chose to criticize WMC in his statement while neglecting others who also have very large influence in election cycles, like the teachers' unions, the labor unions, and the trial attorneys.
Well, that's a good question. The teachers' unions, the trial attorneys, and the labor unions have in the past been very effective and very big players in state politics. It's my observation that they've been a lot less effective in recent years, and certainly they haven't been the ones responsible for electing the people that have distracted the state from a sound strategic path. They haven't been the ones who've elected officials that spent most of their time fussing around over issues that are really irrelevant to the economy. Blocking domestic partner benefits, which is a big competitive issue for the university, for every state agency, for all of the businesses in the state, most of which offer domestic partner benefits. Gun control, as far as I can see, is not a big economic issue. The definition of marriage is not a big economic issue. Spending time yelling at the university over some obscure instructor's personal views, which we made very clear were not in any way affecting the way he taught his courses, is not an economic issue for the state. Why is the business community and why are our elected officials not focusing on tax reform and statutory reforms of various kinds? And I gave some suggestions in my article about what some of those might be, instead of just getting distracted with sideline issues.
Yeah. Well, we only have a minute to go, unfortunately. Besides tax reforms that you suggested, what other fix might we have to this problem?
Well, you mentioned one of them. I think the state should take a close, serious look at the way we build buildings and answer the question, why does it cost us twice as much and take twice as long to build a building as it does in the private sector? And I know what it takes in the private sector. I chair the Research Park Board. We build buildings out in the Research Park for $150 a square foot, and we haven't built anything that cheaply on campus for a decade.
Yeah, we have only 30 seconds to go. You're going to be be a professor and interim director of the Discoveries Institute. You're going to run for political office maybe in the future?
Not now, not ever.
How come?
I have other things to do.
Well, we hope that we'll talk with you some more. Thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
John Wiley, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, steps down on September the 1st. We will talk with a spokesperson for Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce coming up after we check the latest news. You're listening to the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's now 7:34 on this Monday, August the 25th, and you're listening to the State Capitol Report. We just heard from John Wiley, who is the outgoing chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He steps down on September the 1st, and he's going out with a bang. He had an article published in the latest issue of Madison Magazine in which he criticized the largest business group in Wisconsin, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, for contributing a lot to the partisan politics that he says are hurting Wisconsin's future. He says that Wisconsin has lost its way. And we welcome your thoughts and questions as we get a response from James Buchan, Vice President of Government Relations for Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And James Buchan joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, first let me get you to respond to Chancellor Wiley's comments that he says the hyper-partisan political environment at the state capitol is toxic and that the state's largest lobbying group for businesses, WMC, has been taken hostage by partisan ideologues.
I guess he'd be referring to me, although I've been here for more than 20 years, so I'm not sure what exactly has changed in that time, but in as much as I'm in charge of the government affairs and political side of the organization. I suppose I would be the responsible party or the target of his accusation in any event.
Yeah, he certainly doesn't name any names in the article. You deny that the group has become, say, increasingly partisan over the years?
Well, I think we have consistently supported those individuals running for public office who share our perspective on what it takes to grow a strong economy in Wisconsin, that understand the importance of a strong economy and are interested in pursuing public policies that will accomplish that goal, recognizing that a strong economy helps everybody. I mean, it provides the tax base that lets us adequately fund the university and the K-12 system and all of the other important things that, that government does. So that's been our consistent approach on politics, and we've pursued that as long as I've been with the organization for, like I say, more than 20 years.
What about the charges that Chancellor Wiley, he listed a long list of issues that mainly Republican candidates have been pushing for, opposing domestic partnership, opposing gay marriage, a lot of social issues that have nothing really to do with a strong economy?
Well, clearly politicians of both parties have agendas that are wide-ranging, and they include issues that relate to the economy, and they include social issues and other things that perhaps don't. The legislature deals with, as I say, a wide range of things. I think it seems a little odd and maybe inappropriate to sort of impute to us all of the policies pursued by, any given legislator. We certainly aren't involved in pushing most of the policies or opposing all the policies, I guess, as the case may be, that he's talking about, and really have nothing to do with that discussion. And I think, he suggests that we've backed some of the legislators that are, big critics of the university, and I think that the record would show that that's not really true. Some of the most outspoken critics of the university really haven't enjoyed WMC backing, and it wasn't for that reason, but for other reasons. And I think that he's got that wrong.
Has WMC ever backed a Democrat running for state office?
Oh, of course. And every session we back Democrats running for public office and enjoy a good working relationship with many members from both sides of the aisle. And we don't agree with all of them on either side of the aisle. But and I think, it would be fair to say that the majority of the people we have backed over the years tend to be Republicans, because Republicans tend to support the policy, the kind of policies that that we believe are in the best interests of growing the economy and creating jobs in our state. Yeah. And our support for incumbents is based on a voting record. We simply tally up at the end of the year how the members of the legislature voted on the various issues that that are important to the business community. And anybody with a 70% or better record automatically enjoys our support.
What do you... I think a lot of Chancellor Wiley and others were very critical of WMC's involvement in the last two state Supreme Court races. Do you think your group did anything wrong in putting ads out in either of those races?
Well, I think this discussion about our involvement in politics or criticism of our involvement, I guess is what you'd have to call it, seems sort of oddly one-sided. In the Supreme Court case, or Supreme Court race is an example. The teachers' union and an organization called One Wisconsin, or excuse me, the Wisconsin, the Greater Wisconsin Committee, spent more than we did, and yet nobody talks about them. And I think the point is that for many years in this state, there was really only one side to the sort of public debate on the part of outside groups. and that was primarily the unions. And it was only in recent years that the business community decided that, you know, there needs to be a second voice here. We need to have a more rounded out public discussion of issues and candidates at election time. And so we got involved in independent advertising to discuss the issues from our perspective. And it's created a little more balanced discussion, but it has also meant that the candidates supported by the unions and others on the left have had a tougher time, I think, sometimes, winning the support of the electorate. And I think some of these people are not happy with that, result and are critical of us, exclusively us, because they would just as soon we stopped being involved so that we could return to the days when only the labor unions ran independent political ads.
Yeah. Did WMC cross the line by, and I'm trying to remember if it was the WMC ad that called Justice Louis Butler Loophole Louis?
Well, we didn't call him Loophole Louis. His colleagues called him Loophole Louis, and he actually embraced the moniker in a press release saying, you know, he takes it as a badge of honor. And we simply pointed that out in an ad. We didn't call him that. We pointed out that his colleagues called him that. And what we were trying to get across, I think, was that this was a race about two competing judicial philosophies. And I think the voters made a choice based on, you know, a better understanding that that is, in fact, what they had in front of them was a choice between two competing judicial philosophies. The suggestion that somehow we elected people, you know, I get to cast one vote just like you do. The voters elect these people. It's based on information that they have in the marketplace of ideas that comes from all kinds of sources, political ads certainly, but also from places like public radio and debates and all kinds of sources of information. And then they are the ones that make the decision and in this case elected mm-hmm. Judge Gableman over Justice Butler. So I think that you know, the process works. The you know, the discussion and the information that the voters have is improved by having more than one perspective in the marketplace, and that's a perspective that we bring to the table that's different than that of the labor union.
Yeah, we have lots of callers for you, but first let me get you to respond to Chancellor Wiley's conclusion in the latest issue of Madison Magazine. He had this message for the companies that belong to WMC. Please get control of your staff or replace them. Tell them and your board that they are expected to stay focused on legitimate issues of Wisconsin's economic development instead of their personal political biases.
Well, I think that, you know, we are a member organization, and we wouldn't have jobs there if we weren't representing the interests of the members, or we wouldn't have members, I guess, would be another way of saying it. Clearly, Chancellor Wiley disagrees with us on some issues, although I'm not exactly sure. Well, I guess some of them are outlined in his column. And that's his prerogative, and it's certainly fair for him to see see the world differently and see issues of what's important to the economy differently than the way the business community sees it. But it is equally legitimate for the business community to have its own perspective on what's good for the economy and what they think is good for growing their business and creating jobs in the state. And that's reflected in the agenda of WMC and the work of the WMC staff. That's what they hire us to do, and that's what we pursue. The personal philosophies really have nothing to do with it. Our job is to represent the interests of our members.
Our guest is James Buchan, Vice President of Government Relations for Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. He's responding to outgoing Chancellor John Wiley's article that appears in the September issue of Madison magazine, in which he wrote, "Wisconsin has lost its way. We've lost touch with our tradition and values. Our politics has become a poisonous swill, and the most influential voice for the business community has been taken hostage by partisan ideologues." We'll get to your calls in just a moment. You can also send us an email, talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. It's 13 minutes before 8 o'clock. This is the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up, we'll hear from a guest who says that you can't be president, despite what you learned in school. We'll find out why coming up after 8. Right now, we're talking with James Buchan. He is Vice President of Government Relations for WMC. He's talking with us, responding to outgoing Chancellor, UW-Madison Chancellor John Wiley's comments that WMC's tactics are hurting Wisconsin. And John in Wausau is with us next. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
The chancellor asked why WMC operates as it does. I'd like to answer that question, if I may. Those of us who are business owners understand that we are probably a little better educated than average, a little better well-off than average, and because of those two things and the fact that education and earnings are the greatest predictor of wealth or above average income, we don't have a lot of natural allies in the voting booth. And therefore, if we expect to get some people who will vote for us, we have to do some aiming of campaigning at people who are less well educated and less well off on issues that make them think we represent them, such as gay and benefits for employees of the universities, gay marriage, gun control, and the death penalty, things that have absolutely nothing to do with making money in business, but by using those issues at election time, we bring out the less educated, lower income people who will vote Republican and support us in the long run.
All right. Is that what's happening, James Buchan?
Well, we have never talked about any of those issues in any political advertising we've ever done. We generally confine our discussion to, you know, issues that directly do affect business. We certainly haven't taken a position on gay marriage and partner benefits or any of those issues. So, I wouldn't argue with the caller that some people use those for political purposes, but it really has nothing to do with our political activities. You know, I think, frankly, that the trouble that the university has had in recent years with its budget in the legislature is really more a function of just a very tight budget. I mean, the state government is running a deficit, basically, and so there's intense competition for the available resources, and, you know, the university has not done as well as it has in the past. And to call that a partisan issue, I think, is inappropriate. I mean, Governor Doyle proposed significant cuts to the university. And, of course, every budget that has passed, the last couple budgets, have had bipartisan agreements. And so, I mean, it isn't as bleakly partisan as the chancellor would suggest. I mean, nothing will pass unless Democrats in the Senate and Republicans in the Assembly wanted to. So automatically, you have to have agreement.
Yeah.
And if you look at this session, they passed probably a typical number of bills, almost 400 bills, which is typical of most sessions. So, I don't think it's been any less productive than it has been in the past. I mean, you can argue about productivity or what constitutes productivity in the legislature, But I don't think they're passing any fewer bills now than they did typically.
Yeah. Well, do you agree, James Buchan, though, that given the tight budgets, given the cuts that have occurred, or the, not keeping up with inflation kind of UW budgets, that this is hurting the university and ultimately hurting the future economy of Wisconsin?
Well, I think, you know, the GPR support for the university is really what is at issue here, and that has not kept pace with inflation in the last decade. But the overall university budget has grown by more than 5% a year over the last 10 years and is more than keeping pace with inflation, the difference being made up with higher tuition and other sources of revenue. In fact, the business community has been contributing millions and millions of dollars to the UW. Every new building that goes up on the Madison campus is essentially paid for by donations from the business community. And so I'm somewhat baffled by Chancellor Wiley's attack on business leaders, given their steadfast support. And in fact, all of the so-called ideologues that he rails against at WMC, every lobbyist in the building is a proud UW-Madison alumni, including myself, and are strong supporters of their alma mater.
We have an email from Bill in Madison. Chancellor Wiley indicated that business taxes are very low in Wisconsin, especially when compared to other states. Does WMC agree with that? And if not, can you support the position?
Well, I think if you look at the rankings for corporate income tax, we rank about 16th, 17th in the nation. Businesses pay, unemployment taxes, sales taxes on various things. I think the statistic that is often cited is the amount of taxes paid by business as a proportion of the total tax pie is relatively smaller here than other states. But that's, that's a relative sort of comparison, and it's largely a function of the fact that we have a very large tax pie. I mean, this is generally a relatively higher taxing state. We just recently dropped out of the top 10, which was a longstanding goal of ours to see the state drop out of the top 10, and we hailed that accomplishment, and now we have to try to keep ourselves there. But I think that we don't have low taxes on business as a general proposition, and I think most business people would tell you that. There are states that have no corporate income tax, for example. I mean, that would be really low taxes. There are more than a handful.
Yeah. Elaine in Appleton is with us now. Hi, Elaine.
Hi. I'm just wondering why you have convinced our Republican legislature that 26 or more corporations are paying no state tax at all to Wisconsin, yet they reap the benefits of our highways and our educational system and things like that. I'll hang up.
All right. James Buchan?
Well, I don't. In any given year, there are going to be companies that don't pay taxes because their income isn't sufficient to require them to pay taxes. The code is complex. It's got all kinds of complex features, and so there's a lot of things that go on and go into corporate taxation, partially complicated by the fact that you have to apportion it among the states. You may have a company that's headquartered here, has a large facility here, or they also have operations in, three or four or a dozen other states, and so you have to figure out what portion of their total income gets taxed here, and that gets complicated. But there's been a lot of misinformation about this issue. The people that are trying to portray the business community as not paying its fair share, will make requests of the Department of Revenue to see the taxes of a given corporation, but they submit the wrong name, not the part of the company that actually paid the taxes, so they get information back that tells them that no taxes were paid when, in fact, substantial taxes were paid. In other instances, the corporation is organized as a subchapter S, which means that the taxes are paid at the personal level, or it's a limited liability partnership or corporation, similarly taxed at the personal level. So there's a lot of complexity to this issue, but I think most business side taxpayers, the people that work in the trenches on the tax staffs of these companies, will tell you that we have a very aggressive Department of Revenue. We have have there's nobody escaping taxes that you know that they should be paying, and that if anything, we're overzealous in this state with respect to corporate taxation.
Laura in Madison is with us now. Hi, Laura.
Hi. It seems to me that I recall WMC opposing things like CAFE standards, in other words, you know, efficiency for our motor vehicles, and eventually that's what's led to the downfall of the GM plant in Janesville. I haven't heard WMC talking much about Janesville. What did WMC do to prevent GM from leaving Janesville, and what does WMC say about environmental cleanup anyways? I mean, like, how do you hold paper mills accountable for...
Yeah, I'm not sure we can get way... That's getting a little bit far afield from our topic here, but you want to talk about Janesville?
Well, it's unfortunate, but that was a very old plant, and, you know, GM's facing a struggle, and they made business decisions about where they were going to grow and expand, and unfortunately it wasn't here. I think that with respect to CAFE standards, I think that we have sort of a philosophical-based perspective on whether the government drives those decisions or whether the consumers get to drive those decisions. And I think that our preference is to let the marketplace drive those decisions. And, in fact, you see radical change occurring overnight virtually on consumer preference, and the the manufacturers are responding very rapidly to try to meet that changed perspective on what people expect for gas mileage.
Yeah, you know what?
A better approach in our estimation than having the government just step in and artificially force these mileage standards.
I'm afraid we're out of time. Thank you very much, James Buchan, for being with us.
Well, thank you.
James Buchan, Vice President for Government Relations for Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. John Wiley, the outgoing Chancellor of UW-Madison, was our guest in our first half hour of the State Capitol Report. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster and to Michelle Kofel for producing this hour. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.